Uncommon is a production by Neural, a full-service digital agency. If you want to grow with a premium agency and have the ability to work with Jordan directly, then learn more at neural.com/media and request a callback. That's neural.com/media.
My name's Jordan Michaelides, and I'm the host of Uncommon, a show that asks the why on business, media, current affairs, and sport. Uncommon Corona Edition sees us catching up with prior guests to document how they're adapting during this once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. If you like the episode, do leave a written review on your podcast app, as it does help us continue what we're doing. Don't forget that there's plenty of past episodes to keep you entertained at home. Show notes are below. You can also find all previous guests at neural.com/uncommon. That's neural.com/uncommon. For the full video, just search Uncommon Show on YouTube. And for social, to keep up to date with behind the scenes, search at uncommon_show. With that being said, let's get into the episode. My guest this week is James Cridland, founder of PodNews and Media.info, radio futurologist and well-known industry consultant. He's also the man that has gifted me probably the best beer coaster that I currently possess. How's
I wouldn't oversell it.
Yeah. How's life in Brisbane?
Life in Brisbane is it's Brisbane. It's beautiful and sunny outside, and not very many people are here, so we're doing okay in terms of the whole virus thing.
Yeah, have you in the last week had the opportunity to do some activities you've been missing, like going to the beach or rides or anything like that?
I mean, the mother-in-law came over on Sunday.
Okay,
so there is always that. I mean, we've been sort of relatively lucky in that most of the places that we want to go to have been open vaguely, So you know, being able to, you know, I went to get some varnish the other week from Bunnings. That was exciting.
Yeah. What are you doing there? Little pet project?
I was repainting my steps. Okay. The steps down into the house, literally that, so that they wouldn't fall apart. So we've been sort of relatively lucky. I mean, obviously, you know, homeschooling is fun, and that's been a little bit of entertaining time management. But I think apart from that, you know, everything's pretty good. I mean, you know, we work from home. You know, I work from home. My partner works from home. So from a point of view of, you know, how it's changed our life, it probably hasn't changed our life that much.
Yeah.
And obviously having our daughter around as well is a change, but not that much of one. So
how old's your daughter roughly?
She's 7. So,
okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So she's not too young, but she's young enough to need attention, but also willing enough to sort of do her own thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So it's been interesting. I've been learning Japanese.
Okay.
So yes.
Did you do any I would assume in the UK if you did learn a language, they would teach you French or German, right?
They teach you French, yeah. And if you did learn a language, is exactly right, because frankly, as you all know, you know, if you're English and you're abroad, then you just shout a bit louder. And people understand you. So,
oh shit!
There's no worries there.
It's interesting you mentioned before about Bunnings. That was the thing that was giving me concern, because Bunnings has been open the entire time.
Yeah.
And although the cases were coming down, we went into Bunnings the other week to buy some WD-40 to fix. Actually, this door right behind me, it was starting to squeak.
Mm.
And I don't know. There was just so many people. And I'm just like,
yeah.
Are we going to be having a second wave now? Are we going to be reversing what good we've done in the last few months? So,
I thought it was interesting. So there's two things that I've done. One of them is I now just go to the supermarket by pickup or by delivery. So I never actually go into the supermarket, which is a great thing, and I highly recommend it. You also spend much less as well, which is nice.
Interesting.
So that's one thing. And the other thing that I noticed is, in terms of, obviously coronavirus, has been spreading a little bit, but also you have a look at the flu numbers. The flu numbers are amazing. I mean, normally, thousands of people would have caught the flu or died from the flu by this point, and there have been 20 because people are washing their hands and people are social distancing, and guess
and
what?
And also getting the flu shot.
The flu as well. Well, yeah. And also getting the flu shot.
Well,
as well.
People, that's really interesting, is people that would ordinarily say, oh, the flu shot, I actually get the flu from the flu shot, and I just sit there not rolling my eyes, but just thinking it's not the same thing. But those people are now getting the flu shot. And it's very interesting. And also, I think you're right. I think I was saying this the other day on a podcast. I don't know why, and it seems so naive in hindsight, but every time you come home, you've been outside for a few hours, touching things, public transport, shaking hands, coughing, picking your nose, whatever your thing of choice is, and you come home and you just start acting like everything's normal. I would never go beeline to the bathroom and do like a full-on wash as they recommend. And it just seems so naive in hindsight, but now I mean, obviously you do it before eating and cooking food and stuff like that. But I just think about how many times it makes you understand why the cold is so contagious and so many people get it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. So isn't it amazing what happens when you wash your hands?
I know. For you, what's this been like? I've been asking people sort of, is this, for most of our millennials, is this a scarification moment? I guess from your perspective, how big do you see this moment historically?
Oh, I mean, I find it's going to be very, very interesting. So you've got the whole economic thing, which we can put on one side because we've got no idea how that's going to pan out. But then we've got the whole social thing of companies who have up until very recently turned around and said, we don't have any reason that you should be working from home. You should always come into the office. You should spend 45 minutes of your day commuting into the office and sit in a expensive office in the CBD. And then at the end of that, spend another 45 minutes commuting home. And no, we won't pay you for your commuting and blah, blah, blah. And you suddenly realize how mad all of that is, given that many of us are, doing a pretty good job working from home rather than having to go into an expensive office. And my guess is, my hope is, that what that will mean is far less commuting when we get back to normal, far less commuting, far less, big offices in the CBD, and far more working out of our home offices, working out of our home environments. And I think that's going to be not necessarily full time, but certainly, 3 days a week, 4 days a week. And I think that'll be really good for the community, really good for lots of things, really good for the environment as well, of course. So that'll make a big difference, I think. And we've also seen, just people really sort of pushing, you've watched TV, and lots of TV has been coming from home or coming from being made in very different ways. I was watching Alan Kohler on the ABC, and Alan is the business guy, and you can see that he's still doing his normal finance report every single night, but you can see that there's something different about his camera, and there's something different about the way he's actually doing it, and he must be doing it from home, standing in front of a green screen, and why not? why would he have to travel all the way into Sydney to do the same job that he's doing from his house? So I find all of that really interesting, and just the change in technology, particularly around broadcasting, is going to be really interesting to see how that continues.
Yeah, we've thought a lot about this because probably a month before this started really kicking off, we were discussing what we do about office space. And so, from previously coming on or coming here when you were here for the annual Pod Fest event that everyone gets to, run by The ABC runs it, right?
Yeah, that's
right. And Ozpod, that's right. And we were just thinking, okay, we'll probably get somewhere on Collins Street because we want good access for guests. And for a long time, we've also said, our competitive advantage is getting people in person in the studio and the experience and all that sort of stuff. And I don't really want to do remote interviews, but, you know, here we are.
Yeah.
And so it's really changed the expectations of the audience, but also the expectations internally on what that would look like. I'm now pretty firm that we will have a studio because I don't want to have it in my home anymore. But the idea of having a proper office space with multiple staff has definitely been thrown in the bin. And I think that remote interviews are now going to be an open slather, and it's really just we're going to really open ourselves up to a lot more international guests because we were trying to plan that whole field of, okay, if they're touring, we know these PR people, let's contact them, and we're sort of building those relationships. But I feel like now we don't need that as much, and people are so willing to use Zoom as well.
I think that we need to be careful. I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of what I do is speaking at conferences, and
yes,
all of that is gone. And you know, I've been invited to a few webinars, and you know,
it's not the same.
It's just not the same.
I mean, it's like watching the footy on TV with no crowd. It's just not the same.
It is. I mean, plus, because, you know, a good conference, you are having meetings at 7 a.m. and you are still having meetings at 2 a.m. the next day, you know, because it's a good conference and all of the people that you want are around you and everything else. And, you know, and that, of course, doesn't happen with a webinar. So I think from that point of view, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how webinars work and what happens to the conference industry. You know, the real benefit, I think, of a conference isn't the conference, isn't the speakers. It's the fact that you have all of these amazing people around you and you can, you know, bump into people in the bar and have a really good conversation that leads somewhere. Whereas, you know, the speakers are kind of the, you know, the sort of the second, you know, there might be the reason why you can convince your bosses to pay for the ticket, but that's about as far as it goes, I think. So it's really interesting. It's a really interesting sort of change, I think, in that. And, you know, clearly Zoom isn't going to replace that.
No.
You know, as well. And Zoom, of course, is a whole... You know,
yeah, that's a whole other thing.
Of the fact that we're all using Zoom for some reason, yet there are so many better products out there.
Well,
we're all using Zoom.
Well, that's. Can you tell us what? Because I've been reading Pod News. Pod News is still my top three things that I read. Pod News, Mumbrella, and probably Value Investing World is like my economic resource. So I think anyone listening who enjoys podcasting and radio should be listening or at least reading the newsletter if they can. But in your opinion, what is better than Zoom? Because Zoom is now pushing this feature update on May 30. And I can't use this external camera anymore as soon as they do that.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah.
I mean, I have been using for normal chats. For recording, it's slightly different because we all need specific things.
Yes. But
for video chats, I've been using a service called Whereby.
Okay.
Whereby is free and it's really simple. There's just a URL and that URL you can give to anybody and you can set it so that they knock on the door to be allowed in. Which is really simple, no accounts needed or anything else. So it's a really simple thing. And what all that UX does is it means that you are never bombed with any unsavory content or anything else because they knock on the door and you let them in. It's how houses work and how offices work.
That's good.
That has been really, that's a really nice tool, and it's free for under four people and various other things. And it just works in Chrome, so you don't need to download any software or anything else.
Okay.
So that's a great tool. I've also discovered a tool called Jitsi, which you'll find at meet.jit.si. And what Jitsi is it's open source video software, which you can use it for free online, but also B, you can install it onto your own servers if you're a company, and you can run your own video conferencing system, and you can tie that into your normal username and password thing and all of that, which is really neat. But one of the things that Jitsi does, which is, again, so simple, but very few people do, is you can record on it. But when you record on it, it records an MP4 straight into your Dropbox.
Oh, I like that.
So that it doesn't have to pay for any storage. It's just chucking it onto your own Dropbox, which you connect. And so, hey, presto, you've got a system that records video. It's up to 100 people. It's all free. And it's a very smart thing. The only thing that it doesn't have, rather annoyingly, is the knock on the door.
Yes. It's very hard, though, if you're doing both. Both, you know, if your priority is audio or if your priority is video.
Yes.
You know, like as an example with Zoom, you only get an MP3 file, which is terrible.
Right.
Yeah. There's no individual tracks.
Yeah.
The best I've found, because we do a lot of our client-based podcasts on it, is Zencastr.
Yeah.
Which is really, really good for recording separate audio tracks.
Yes. I gather that Zencastr, Squadcast, and CleanFeed are the three that podcasters use a fair amount. And, and they all seem to work really well. So, you know, from that point of view, I think any one of those should do the trick. What I tend to do is I tend to record when I'm being interviewed anyway, I tend to record it my side. Firstly, so that I know what I've said, which is usually important, but also secondly, and probably more importantly, that there's a quality copy on my side, which I can then send over just in case. So, you know.
And what are you recording that on typically?
I'm recording it on my normal workstation, my normal Hindenburg. So,
Okay. Because, we need to look into this properly with our producer. And because I've just started my own YouTube channel where I'm covering a lot of marketing and business topics. And we've been using OBS, which is amazing for recording video and screen shares.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to work out if there's a way of hooking in Skype or something like that so we can still record it locally and get the different tracks.
Yes.
So I'll have to look into that. But I like the sound of these two. Whereby and Jitsi, and we'll have to look into them.
Yeah. I mean I looking at Jitsi, which apparently is produced by the people that made Whereby. Jitsi looks to be amazingly good and really capable of all kinds of things. And again, all you need is Chrome. So you don't need you don't need anything else. I mean, I suppose on the other side, of course, the way that you get the best quality audio is somebody using a microphone and actually using a microphone properly.
Yeah.
And so for quite a lot of people, they actually find that FaceTime works really well if you turn off video and you are holding your phone to your ear and you are talking to it as if you're having a telephone call, because then you've got a microphone in the right place. It's decent quality and, you know, and hey, presto. And there may be a way, I don't quite understand iOS, but there may be a way of also recording that locally on the phone at the same time.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because Josh Jansen from the Daily Talk Show mentioned to me that they were doing dial-ins for people, so they call like a 1-300 number. They use vMix.
Yeah.
And that's another story in and of itself. vMix is a nightmare to work with if you primarily use Mac. And for dial-ins, people would dial in via FaceTime and then just turn off their video. It's a handy, very, very handy little hack.
Yeah. And of course, it gives you more upload bandwidth for the audio and, you know, and all of that. So theoretically, at least, it should do a really good job. But yeah.
Now, when did you start to pay attention to, I guess, these coronavirus developments? Like I just for general and work, we started to pay attention probably late December, early Jan. I feel like the first time I read a proper serious article about it was like the day after New Year's, maybe. And I thought, okay, this is serious, but let's see what happens. I guess they'll be able to contain it because they've got such a stronghold on everything in China that I thought, okay, the government will just clamp down on this thing. And you know, I think I really started to pay attention when there was a run on toilet paper in Hong Kong and then Singapore, because Lauren and I had been in Japan in October of 2019 during Typhoon Hagibis. Mm-hmm. And so we'd seen what that looks like and experienced that for 48 hours. And it's not fun. It's not fun to have to walk for 4 or 5 hours to different supermarkets and see that there is nothing there. And so we basically lived off 7-Eleven food and a bunch of whatever was left at supermarkets for about 48 hours while we were locked inside. So from your perspective, when did you start to take this thing seriously?
I mean, I guess I, like most people, saw the news coming out of China and thought it's another SARS. And, you know, SARS never really got anywhere in the West, never really got anywhere out of some of the countries around China. So I didn't really worry too much about it. And I think, you know, it's when it came as a surprise was that massive stock exchange crash. And you suddenly thought, this is going to be a big thing. And all of a sudden, you know, I mean, what was it? 30% wiped off the Australian stock market and all of that. And you that was the first time when I thought, no, this is going to be quite an event. And I think, you know, it probably took quite a lot of people by surprise, probably because we were lured into some complacency with SARS and with other things like that. And we thought it'll just be another one of those. And there's a fair amount of sort of cry wolf here, I think. You know, if you, quite a lot of people were trying to make a connection between the coronavirus and the year 2000 bug, and saying, you know, year 2000 bug is gonna, you know, kill us all. You know, planes are gonna fall out of the sky, and of course, none of that happened. But the reason why none of that happened is because we sat and we fixed all of the bugs. Because everybody got really scared about it. That's the reason why. It wasn't because there wasn't such a thing as the year 2000 bug. It's there was, but we managed to fix it because a lot of people were scared. And in the same way, you know, the coronavirus to an extent at the beginning was, oh, this is really scary, but it'll probably never really happen, you know? And I think, you know, now seeing... you know, the numbers coming out of Russia, coming out of the US, you know, and of course coming out of places like Northern Italy and Iran and all of those sorts of areas, you suddenly realize, no, this is a different, you know, a different thing.
And I think, I feel like for me, it was like, everyone talks about that Friday, when the Grand Prix got cancelled, pretty sure the AFL season started being cancelled. Fashion Week in Melbourne got cancelled. I actually wrote down a few here. I think those were the main ones, but I feel like that was the Friday that was the same Friday that the stock market started to crash, and then Friday in America everything just shat itself. So I feel like that was the day and it was Friday the 13th of March. I'm pretty sure it was. Sure it was the 13th of March. Wow. And because I remember I did an interview for a client podcast that's finance based, and she was like, this is wild. She was on the ABC all day doing commentary. So that's interesting. For pod news, have you noticed... much of a difference to how, like, obviously you're not going and doing talks anymore.
Yeah.
How have things been for you at Pod News?
I think we're quite lucky in that, I mean, obviously you can get emails at work or at home or wherever it is that you get that. So from a consumption point of view, there's really been very little change. Open rates went down a little bit, as you would probably expect, but not that much. And, you know, and so people are still consuming it. There was an awful lot of news for a couple of weeks about how the coronavirus is affecting podcasting. But in terms of, you know, I was fully expecting advertisers to cancel, you know, nobody to buy the classified ads, you know, all of the financial side of the business to collapse. And none of that, touch wood, has actually happened. And I think that's probably because podcasting is, you know, we're lucky we can do this in our own home, you know, in our own home offices and that sort of thing. So actually, we've seen the largest amount of new podcasts, appearing as more people have launched new podcasts from home. You know, so I think from that point of view, that's made the podcast industry very lucky. And certainly when you talk to the podcast hosts, they're all saying we're really busy. We are really busy. We are signing up more business than we ever have done in the past. You know, we're more new podcasts are going up there. You know, it's a really busy time. We are properly full on, particularly the customer service teams.
Yeah, I noticed as a producer and creating a podcast, there was a slight downtick in downloads for that first month. And then I started to realize, okay, there's actually like 20% of our audience that that listens to it easily on the commute. I actually spoke to some of those people. Yeah. Someone contacted us on Instagram and said, oh, hey man, looking forward to this episode. I can't believe I missed it. And it was like 2 weeks ago. And like, I default into putting it on in the car. Yes. And so that was really interesting and got us thinking about integrating more of that sort of greeting that audience, I guess, on their commute when that happens again. But now we've noticed an uptick in downloads. I think people are getting used to this way of consuming content. But there's also the issue that you're right. There's never been a better time to start a podcast and everyone has one. So I think it's drowning out a lot of people that were sort of in that hobby phase, and we're sort of lucky that we started, for us at least, 2 to 3 years ago.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, what I've been deliberately not linking to from Pod News has been stories, you know, that have been popping up in the newspapers of, you know, 40-year-old man, you know, bored, starts his new podcast from home. And there have been a lot of those stories. And that's exactly it's exactly not what anybody wants to see. So, you know, so I've deliberately not been linking to any of those. But yeah, there's been a fair amount of that. But I think, you know, as you say, I think habits... habits are particularly important for media consumption. And, you know, the radio world, for example, lots of radio is listened to in the car. Lots of radio is listened to on a commute. It's the thing that turns on automatically when you start your car. And so that does really well. And so radio has had a tremendous change, a really large change in terms of consumption and where it's consumed and how it's consumed. But once you sit there for a couple of weeks, and you know you're getting used to your new life, then you get new habits, and you know, and everybody now is seeing that for the last 2 weeks, certainly podcasting has been on the rise, not on the rise particularly quickly, but nevertheless on the rise, and is certainly not going down anymore. And I think that is just due to the fact that, you know, we now have our habits, we now understand where we can fit a podcast into our daily life, and that habit probably won't get broken again when things, you know, change back. There's probably really good news, I think, for us as podcasters, as we go out of lockdown, because people will have not just fitted in podcasting into their commute, but also worked out where else in their lives they can fit podcasting into as well.
The point on radio is really interesting, because so we've had Jason PJ from KISS, which is part of ARN, on the show. My partner and I love their show, and we listen to their podcast every day. And so it's been interesting reading on it. I don't know if you publish much of the data to this, but I know SCA has had major job cuts due to revenue loss, and they've got a mountain of debt. And I don't know if I'm starting to think that SCA might need to be restructured with some sort of private equity deal or something like that, because they are in a bit of trouble. ARN is down on revenue, but they don't have nearly as much debt as SCA.
ARN, of course, also being owned by HT&E, who also own newspapers, which is screwed.
Yeah.
And they own Out of Home. And I'll tell you one place where you're not going to advertise at the moment, and that's Out of Home.
I think I read on Mumbrella, like, O Media was, their traffic numbers were down like 50% or something that. My assumption is, okay, people are no longer just randomly tuning into the radio, and therefore that affects their CPMs, and that's why revenue is down. Explain, I guess, for people why some of these organizations would be cutting staff and their sales numbers would be so down if people like myself are listening to their podcasts and still tuning in on the radio in the morning.
Well, so, I mean, firstly, let's just put this into context. 9 out of 10 of us listen to the radio every single week. 2 out of 10 of us, or maybe 3 out of 10 of us, listen to a podcast every single week. So radio is still much, much larger. And the radio habit isn't going to go away anytime soon, even if Alan Jones has just retired. I think there's two things that have gone on. Firstly, there has been a change in consumption of radio. Now, you look at the radio industry, and the radio industry has been claiming for the last month and a half, more people are listening to radio. It's brilliant. Which is, politely, it's a fabrication. It's deliberately picking certain bits of context. And once you look into what it is that they're actually saying, they're saying that online streaming of radio has doubled. Well, great. I mean, double nothing is still nothing. But if you want to double that audience, then that's fantastic. That's probably 9% doubling to 18% of all radio consumption. Great, fine. So, but they can still turn around and say streaming's doubled. You know, radio's doing gangbusters, and that's a good story for them. So you've got that side. You also have the side in Australia and in the UK and in a few other places where the radio industry's figures are made from people going to people's houses, knocking on the door, asking them to fill out a diary, and then back a week later, taking that diary away. And that's actually really good research. There's nothing wrong with that research, however antiquated it sounds. Apart from one thing, nobody's going door to door anymore because of the Rona. So. Right.
And these are the studies that everyone, what do they call these?
So GFK is the company that does them, but and those panels are great. It's not a panel, actually. It's, diary studies are great. And by the way, it's important to point out, it is not a panel. It is not the same people every single time. What GFK does, what Rajar does in the UK, is that they go to different people every single week. So it's actually really good, robust research that comes out of all of this. But there is the problem of it's not happening right now. So the only data that we do have is from the US, where some of the larger markets have PPMs. And a PPM is a little sort of pager thing that you stick to your belt. And it literally listens to what you listen to, as long as you're not wearing headphones. But anyway, let's ignore that bit. So if you can hear the radio on, it will work out what that radio station is and report back. what that radio station is. And of course, that's still operating during the pandemic. So what we're seeing is data coming out of the US, which is showing us some calamitous figures. I mean, you know, radio stations, I've seen the New York data, and the data is obviously quite well, you know, is not being shared particularly far and wide. But I've seen the New York data, and some of those radio stations are showing 45% fewer listeners. You know, whoa. I mean, it's literally a collapse. And you could see it week by week just going vunk like that. So that's been really interesting seeing. So you've got a real change in consumption, but consumption of radio is actually quite different to the revenue that comes into radio stations from advertisers. And you know, basically, if you're an advertiser, you want to advertise on the radio because it reaches a mass audience. It still does. It's a smaller mass audience, but it still reaches a mass audience. Except, what are you advertising? If you're advertising a sporting event, then there's no point in advertising that. If you're a supermarket and you're advertising, come to our supermarket and buy stuff, then actually you don't want to be doing that either, because there are too many people in supermarkets now. You know, if you're a restaurant, if you're McDonald's, if you're, you know, all of those people are all going, we actually don't want to be advertising now, or we do want to be advertising, but we want to completely change what it is that we're saying, and we're going to yank the advertising while we work out what our message is. And so that's been the real difficulty. And for a while, the large radio groups in Australia were actually seeing that their new business that they were signing up every single week was in negative numbers. So actually, the amount of people cancelling and pulling off was greater than the amount of new business that they were actually signing. So that's been the real difficulty for radio companies. So my understanding is, you know, if you look at SCA, all of the talent, all of the senior management have taken a pay cut.
Yeah.
You look at most of the radio companies, and they've all asked their employees to take their holidays, because that will get that liability off the balance books. You know, there's a bunch of things that's going on there, and it's you know, it's difficult times for the radio industry, but I don't necessarily think, you know, it's horrible times. I think it's, you know, everybody's having to be, you know, to watch their business and watch it quite tightly. But I don't think it's necessarily the end of that business.
No, and I think going back to the original point we first spoke about, it this coronavirus has accelerated things that were probably already going to happen. It just brought them very, very far, very closely forward. A bit sooner than I think what people expected. And just on the point of measurement versus advertisement, I always found it interesting in radio that the industry really fell on this whole idea of reach as their sort of key competitive advantage for advertisers. And it's sort of, I felt like this has shown that most of that reach is quite passive. It's not as, there's not as much intent as what maybe they thought they had. And maybe it'll change the way that jobs are quoted for pricing in advertising and radio. Maybe things will, like in a lot of digital advertising, maybe things will change to be more ROI based. I don't know, but yeah, it's got me thinking about that.
I think it's difficult because ROI is one part of advertising, but not everybody wants instant ROI. Quite a lot of people want brand recognition, want you to be, you know, number one in that consumer's shopping list when they go out and shop for the thing that you're going out and buying. I mean, you know, Geico being an obvious example in the States. It's a motor insurance company.
Yeah.
It also does home insurance and stuff like that. It is wasting over 9/10 of its advertising every time it advertises, because most of us don't need insurance, because most of us, we've signed up for the next year, you know, our insurance is due in March. We don't care about it until we get to March. And so what Geico's job is it's not ROI. Geico's job is reminding people that Geico exists so that the next time they have to buy insurance, then they go out and they at least give Geico a call as well as their current insurer. So there's kind of, you know, there's conversations about ROI. There's conversations about, I mean, you know, affiliate deals, for example, online, I simply won't do, because what they do is they give lots of brand equity to the advertiser, and it's up really to them as to whether or not their deal is good enough for my users to buy stuff from them. So how on earth do I win out of that?
That's interesting. That's interesting.
You know, so I kind of look at it from that point of view. But I think radio particularly markets itself in two ways. It markets itself both on reach, because it is a mass market medium and it is reaching a large amount of people. But it's also marketing itself on time spent listening. And actually, time spent listening is where you get your money from in terms of radio. Because it's no good if you have 7 million people who tune in for 10 minutes a week. That's no good whatsoever, because no one can earn money out of that. Nobody can benefit out of that in terms of advertising. So what the radio companies try and do is they try and make sure that you listen for as long as you possibly can, because that then allows advertisers, you know, the opportunities to hear the amount of times that you hear that ad in order to actually sink in. You need to hear an ad at least 3 times for it to even register with you. And so radio is very good at not just reach, but also frequency as well.
Yeah.
And so that's been the sell that radio has had, which is quite different in a way to quite a lot of online stuff that we see, because, you know, reach is quite high in terms of online, but frequency actually is quite low in terms of most of the websites that you actually see. You know, if you're going onto a particular website, you might not visit that website every single day or every single week or even every single month. And that makes it much harder in terms of advertising, which is why, of course, ad networks and stuff like that are around, because otherwise advertising doesn't really work that well.
Are you aware of any resources or data points that show that time listening on podcasts versus radio, or if there's like a general statistic on that? I've wondered. I was just thinking then, like, because we send out a media kit to a prospective advertiser, and it covers things like listenership being the biggest one, and how much of an episode they'll listen to for us, and how many minutes on average you have someone's attention for, which I think for us is somewhere between 45 and 60 minutes per episode. I'd be intrigued as to whether there must be some sort of general data for that on radio today, right?
Yeah, there is. I mean, there's general data in terms of radio, and there's data in terms of podcasting as well. And you know, for radio, I can give you. So there's data certainly in the UK. Australia is a little bit. Less happy at sharing that sort of stuff, but the data in the UK for some reason, but the data in the UK is that roughly we listen to about 20 hours of radio a week.
Okay,
so 20 hours is a pretty nice figure, but of course, you know, that's bearing in mind that 9 out of 10 people listen to radio every single week. If you look at podcasting, it's a little bit harder to work that out, because obviously only 2 or 3 out of 10 are listening to podcasting anyway. So you've got all of that sort of, you've got all of that sort of issue there.
Plus the format, you know, some podcasts are episodical.
Yeah.
The right term. You know, 15, 20 minute pieces versus a conversational podcast like this that might go for over an hour, or like a Joe Rogan podcast, which might go up to 3 hours.
Yes.
I can see how that would be tough to compare.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think, you know, you can certainly see that there's some difference you know, some different conversations, you know, going on there in terms of that. I mean, the last data that we have is from the Infinite Dial study, which happens every single year in the US. Their data, which came out last month, and their data is that average per week is 6 hours, 40 minutes.
Right.
That people listen to podcasts.
Per week.
And that's interesting because that hasn't changed for the last 3 years. So we've had more people coming in to listen to podcasts, of course. Many more people coming in the last 3 years. But in 2018, it was 6 hours, 37 minutes. 2019, 6 hours, 29 minutes. 2020, 6 hours, 39 minutes.
Wow.
It's the same sort of number. It's significantly grown since 2015 when they first asked that question. So,
interesting. That reads like an average commute time of about 80 minutes a day, which is about 40 minutes one way. So maybe that works out.
Yeah, which is about right. I mean, all of the studies that I see in Australia seem to show that the average commute time, certainly in Melbourne and in Sydney, for the depressed people who have to live in those large areas, are around 35 to 40 minutes. So actually, it fits quite nicely in terms of that. Although, you know, most people aren't listening to podcasts in their cars. It's a relatively, you know, relatively unusual thing.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So, well, yeah.
I'm curious from your perspective. I know us as a business, probably in the first month, let's say March to April, I was genuinely shitting myself because a lot of work was gone. Mm. That includes even podcast work. People were not interested in doing podcasts, obviously, because a lot of podcasts are still done in person, particularly if they're for brands.
Yeah.
And we're lucky that we had regular podcast work. We had regular video work. That was more digital based. And so we were able to survive on that. Then things like the JobKeeper came in, which we only just got really. But probably in the last month, we've seen an uptick in work again, but it's all based on, as a full service agency, website design, social media, content that fits within social media generally. I guess that meant that we really sat down and we said, okay, we're not going to be doing as much sales as we would have liked and had assumed, but we're going to compress all of the goals that we had for the year in the business, in changing processes or whatever it may be, and achieving them within 3 months as opposed to a year. Mm. And so we're largely on that way. And now that things are starting to pick up, we feel like we're in a better position actually with this thing happening. So I'm curious from your perspective, how have you thought about any strategic work or planning? Have you had time to do that?
I mean, I guess it's not changed that much for me because I guess, you know, I mean, obviously part of my business of, you know, speaking at radio conferences is completely dead.
So you've got a lot more time for that.
As you would expect. And one of the things that I've been learning is how to, you know, I'm talking at a radio conference next week in Orlando. And one of the things that I've been working on is how to up your game in terms of doing a good video from home rather than, you know, and it's very different because, you know, you end up just sort of shouting at a computer for half an hour and away you go. So it's a very different experience. You don't get any feedback from the audience, you know, and you've got to do all of that. But you also have to do some decent tech for yourself as well you know, how will my slides work? How will, you know, can I get my lighting right, you know, and all of that. And, you know, and so actually getting, you know, a decent light, you know, and all of that has been really important. So I think we're all learning stuff there. In terms of the wider sort of, you know, strategy, it hasn't really changed because at the end of the day, I'm reaching people who are working within podcasting, who are earning money from doing their podcasting or from associated things around that. And people are still doing that. And people are doing that in slightly different ways, but people are still doing that. So from my point of view, that hasn't changed, you know, too much. Other than not bothering to put in an events diary in Pod News at the moment, because there's not much point in that.
Do you run as an ABN or a proprietary limited company?
Yeah, it's a proprietary limited.
Okay. So did you, because we've just gone through this at the moment, seeing whether we qualify for the cash flow boost, and we've already theorized what we'll be spending it on, which is mainly equipment so we can get better at doing live and video and so forth.
Yes.
Have you received that and thought about investing in future equipment?
I've not looked at that, partially because I don't think I qualify. So I think your revenue has to come down a certain amount, and it would be very difficult for me to show how that
happened.
I mean, you know, apart from anything else, I mean, typically, if you are a paid speaker at conferences, then you have really busy months and you have months where nothing happens. So actually it's very difficult to actually show where's the differences, you know, where's the, am I really 20% down or not?
That's interesting. Yeah, that is really hard because we've had guests on that, like yourself, they do pure events. Shura Taft, who hosts the Australian Open, he's sort of the on-court MC. He does the golf tour each year, a bunch of different sporting events, and it's quite clear. And he's a wedding celebrant. Yes. So if you look at all the work, it's basically zero.
Yeah.
So it's a little easy in that regard. But I can understand with that, when you're booked on random events, it would be very hard to showcase that.
Yeah. I think that's difficult. And, you know, my accountant did say, oh, you don't have to pay your... PAYE, I think it was, you don't have to pay it this time round. You can wait and pay it in November. And I was going, might as well pay it now. I've got to pay it anyway. Might as well pay it now and get it out of the way. So, you know, but I think that's probably my, my sort of philosophy for, you know, if I can afford it, then I'll just sort of go ahead and do it and leave that money for somebody else. I mean, I have to say it was very nice. I got an email last week from my energy company.
Okay.
And they said, hey, we've just credited your account with $200. And I was like, fine. Turns out that Queensland government has just paid everybody $200.
Jesus.
Okay. Thanks, Queensland government.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, you know, so weird and wonderful things like that, you know, good fun to actually see. But I mean, you know, I've been looking at investing more in the stock market right now because I know that, you know, we're at a low period, or we hopefully are at a low period. And so, you know, this might be a good time to invest. And so that's one of the things I've been looking at doing. But
My usual investing is sort of just reading a lot and waiting to have moments like we did about a month or so ago. So when that happened, I doubled down on a few bets and averaged out some positions, but it just had me thinking because I didn't do anything. I didn't invest too much of, I still have got a decent amount of cash sitting there waiting because everyone says the market is this efficient thing. And I do not think that is the case. I think we're talking about human psychology. We're still got, at least in the US and Australia, end of financial year results.
Yes.
So for Australia, they'll be coming sort of or announced start of or end of July.
Yeah.
And then in the US, we only just like, I mean, Berkshire Hathaway, who I'm a shareholder of, only just had their AGM for last financial year. So I don't think we're going to see the actual financial repercussions of this for another 6 months. And when we do, it'll hit people harder than they realize.
Yes.
When these big businesses are reporting massive losses and redundancies.
Yeah.
So,
but you know, I mean, other people would say, but that's already priced in now.
Yeah. Then they all say it's priced in, but how can they when we haven't actually seen the figures?
Yeah.
So I don't follow that efficient market. I think efficient market theory is nonsense.
Yes.
Because it's still just a theory. It's not proven.
Yes. My kind of view around the stock market in general is they're all idiots and they know nothing.
Yeah. And they do. And I mean, having worked in the industry and still being involved in both finance and media, yeah. I can reaffirm that position that yeah. is the case. And it's interesting you mentioned the stock market because, you know, all the businesses that we work with in the finance space, and it was on the news the other night that everyone is now a stock picker. And everyone is now a day trader now that we're all at home. So it's, I think when you start hearing things like that, you should start to become concerned and just wait and see what's going to happen. And
ETFs are the future, mate.
ETFs, yeah. Anyway. The US Federal Reserve, the US Federal Reserve has said that they'll support US ETFs as well, which is another story in and of itself. That to me is wild, but I guess from your perspective, I just know from my own consumption, I went from saving probably 20-30% of my income to now saving up to 50% because I'm not spending it on anything. I'm not dining out and consuming. We pretty much cook at home. I don't really do anything but leave the house to go for a walk and exercise.
Yeah.
Yes, we've bought a few furniture items, but you could also say that we've been planning for those anyway. So how do you see, I guess, the economy going over the next 6 to 9 months? I'm not looking for a soundbite. I'm curious from your own little perspective, how do you see things panning out?
I have always planned finances based on two beliefs. And one belief is there's going to be a massive crash really soon. That's the first belief. And the second belief is the best thing you can possibly do for your own finances is to make sure that your monthly outgoings are as low as possible. You know, so if you're lucky enough not to have to borrow money, then great, do that. If you're lucky enough to be able to pay off your house, then do that. Chuck solar panels on the roof because that'll cut the monthly electricity price. Invest in a hybrid car rather than in a gas guzzler because that'll cut your monthly outgoings in terms of that, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so I have this sort of this thing that I've always sort of lived by, which is when I can afford it, I will buy nice things that will lower the overall monthly outgoings that I actually have so that when there is a crash, when I am completely without work, then I'm in a much better position than somebody else who is maybe spending a lot of money on an inner city, you know, apartment and, you
interesting.
Know, and blah, blah, blah.
You would have been a very good portfolio manager. It's very a very risk-adverse mindset is where's the risk in my life and how can I lower it? That's sort of how I've always
seen it. Yeah, to a degree. But you know, I mean, in terms of investment, I'm there going, how much do I need to live for the next year and a half? Mm. I've got that in cash. I've put that in cash somewhere.
Did you say year and a half or half a year?
Year and a half.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know why, but I just thought of
the old emergency fund.
Yeah. Yeah. So the old emergency fund and then anything extra to that, I'm relatively risky with. I'm not mad, but I'm relatively risky with because my suspicion is that, you know, even in the worst crashes, things normally get better in a year and a half-ish.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if you lose a little bit of money, well, you lose a little bit of money, but you're not going to lose all of your money in that time. So
yeah.
When
you invest personally, like I know for myself, I've always focused on areas I understand. I'm always surprised when people go for trend companies. Like the biggest one at the moment, one of the funniest subreddits has got to be Wall Street Bets and their obsession with Tesla. Yeah. That in and of itself is fascinating. I'm actually planning on doing a YouTube video this week on Rene Rivkin and the correlation between Wall Street Bets and that whole culture of just ruining people. But I always focus on tech. media and I guess finance.
Yeah, so, well, you see, I made the mistake of focusing on things that I knew and understood when I first started investing. And I took £1,000 of my own money and I put that into companies that I knew and understood and worked with, because I thought, you know, these companies are great. These companies are really good. And I'm going to invest, you know, just some play money and see if I can, you know, see if I understand this investment business thing. And so I invested in 3 media companies. And then promptly my £1,000 fell to £200. And I thought that was a mistake. I'll never do that again. So literally the only things that I will not invest in companies. I'll only invest in, you know, things like ETFs that follow, you know, so I'm invested in.
Fair enough.
You know, the ASX, an Asian fund, a global fund, but I'm not doing any of those investing into individual companies, because, you know, much though I think that Amazon is good, or, you know, I think that Tesla is a bomb waiting to go off.
Yeah.
But much though I think that all of these companies are really good, I also have absolutely no faith that the stock market knows what they're talking about when it comes to valuation. I think, you know, having seen that in media, having seen, you know, the stock market just simply not understanding how the media works, and you read the quarterly earnings results and you see the questions that the analysts are asking, which really highlights the fact that they have no idea of even just the basics of how a radio company works or how an online streaming company works, then why on earth would I trust them in any of that? Which is why, you know, hedging my bets on indexes rather than individual companies is the only thing that I feel comfortable in doing.
Yeah, and I think it's a very good point. Most people should heed that unless you really come from the industry and know, have a fair idea of what you're doing. I know all of my super is in basically Vanguard ETFs. And to be honest, I'll just dollar cost average that until if I'm lucky enough to access it. But otherwise I do, you know, I think Warren Buffett's done a really good, he had a bet with a fund manager picker, and the bet was $1 million to a charity. Yes. And he picked Vanguard ETFs, and the fund of funds guy picked a bunch of different funds to beat the ETF. And of course it did shockingly bad. Like, I think it was down 15%.
Yeah.
So, there you go. It's sort of just, and I think if you compare most fund managers to an index composite sort of ETF, they generally never outperform unless they're very well-known investors. And in most cases, whether you're a Howard Marks, Buffett, or Renaissance Technologies, they have closed people providing them funds under management decades ago because they just don't have the space or capacity to deal with it. So I think, ETFs is the way to go when it comes to that. I've got to ask for you during this whole period, what has sort of been the most annoying question that you've been asked regularly?
That one. No, I don't know. I mean, you know, you get the same. So I used to be a music radio DJ, and when I interviewed people, you know, they were always sitting there waiting. When I interview bands and things, they're always waiting for the question of, you know, so how did you guys get together? And which is, you know, the typical lazy question that you're always asked. I'm lucky enough in that, you know, most people who are interviewing me don't ask the same questions all the time, which is nice. So I can't think of an annoying question that I've been asked, really.
I would have thought there'd be some sort of funny advertiser or industry-related question that would have come through Pod News, but that's good. It's good to hear that.
No, I mean, it's nice. I mean, you know, it's interesting, rewinding back a little bit, it is interesting when you look at podcasting Facebook groups, and you realize that there is a life cycle to your interest in those, because you go in and everybody's asking questions and you answer them and you help them. And then the next week, everybody's asking the same questions all over again, and you go in and you help them. And then the next week, new people have come in and they're all asking the same questions over and over again. Should I use Anchor? Should I not use Anchor? And so you realize that there is there's a real opportunity out there for someone to work out how to run these communities, but how to run these communities so that the newbies are... you know, the newbie questions are only seen by a certain percentage of people who can help. And then there's a sort of ladder of invisibility that you go up, depending on how good you are and how, you know, experienced you are. So that actually somebody who has been in the industry for 15 years sees a very different set of questions than somebody who's been in the industry for only 5 minutes. And I think, you know, for somebody to work out how that works would be really interesting and really clever. I'm not quite sure how you could possibly do it, but I think it would be a fascinating thing to, you know, to work on, I think.
I think you're right about those groups. They drive me insane. But I was so excited by them when I first started. And now I can't. Now I realize what a pain in the ass I would have looked like.
But now you go in and literally every, you know, Libsyn.
Should I get X microphone?
Should I get X microphone?
And this is like, just start and you work it out.
Yeah.
Stop asking fucking questions. It's basically the way I've looked at it, because we've had guests that are very well-known YouTubers as well. And they get questions around, what camera should I use? Or what backdrop should I use? And so it is basically just a procrastination question. It's basically an excuse to prevent them from starting.
Yeah, it's you know, none of the, you know, there's conversations around kit, and the best kit in the world is not going to make you a great podcast. You know, it's actually the content. And you look at, you know, the number one, you know, the number one radio station in Sydney is a radio station that is where the audio quality sounds pretty dreadful because it's on AM. And most of the presenters at the moment are coming from their home studios, which sound even more awful added onto that. And it is still the number one in Sydney, and 3AW does pretty well in Melbourne as well. You know, looking at those numbers and you go, well, you know, it's actually that content trumps quality. Mm-hmm. And if you have something which is good enough in terms of quality, then the content is the thing that makes it, you know, really good. So obviously make sure that you can hear it. Make sure that you're not fiddling with a, you know, fiddling with a phone, or you've put your microphone the other side of the office. But apart from that, just, you know, focus on what you say, not what you say it into. Yeah.
Now I want to jump into our usual rapid fire questions, and these are very much lockdown specific. What is your morning and evening routine look like in the last 2 months?
Oh, I've just been sleeping a lot more.
Yeah.
Sleeping a lot more. And yeah, but apart from that, not much change because I work from home anyway. So
yeah. There you go. what's been like a go-to documentary movie series that you've been looking at on Netflix or other streaming services of late?
Lego Masters. You're going to say that that's not a documentary, but oh, it so is.
It's a very good series. I love Hamish Blake and the injection of comedy that he provides with it. Yes. It's absolutely fascinating how intense this subculture is.
And if there are Americans watching this and they're going, but we've seen Lego Masters and it's rubbish, that's because of the personality that you have running the show. If you have a really engaging personality as Hamish is, then it makes an entirely different show. And it's fascinating. Yeah.
And if you have a an enthusiastic character like Brickman, then It's quite good. I mean, this is a guy that has cried over the quality of some builds So, yes. Yes. So he is quite the character.
It's quite a thing.
Quite a thing. All right, last question for you. What's been your best purchase under $200 before or during this period that you've been using lately?
There's a question. Because I do buy things. And I buy things and I play around with them. The best purchase that I've done isn't that I've done over the last 6 months isn't necessarily a purchase, but it's a service that I'm absolutely delighted with, and that's that. It's kind of two things. I've stopped using Commonwealth Bank for virtually everything, and my personal banking is with Up. Which is an online-only bank based in Melbourne, I believe. It's very good. Really excellent. And my business banking is now mostly done through TransferWise, which is not a bank. Because, you know, again, it just really works for me. So those have been really nice. And actually, you know, just changing your... trying a few different banks and changing those around and seeing whether or not there's something better than your current legacy big four bank has been really interesting. And I've got a lot of pleasure is probably the wrong word, but much less hassle from, you know, trying Zinja, trying Volt, trying these new weird and wonderful banks and actually realizing, no, Up is a really good bank and it just works really well.
Up is amazing, and it beats all the others for this. We've interviewed Dom, who's the CEO, and it works for this very reason. It's a partnership between Bendigo Adelaide and Ferrokia, which is Dom and Grant Thomas. You probably won't know of him, but Grant Thomas is he coached my football team back in the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah,
and he's a very good business leader. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing because Ferrokia handles all of the tech and product side, and it literally just plugs into Bendigo Adelaide Bank's core banking system, and they make it work. And I've got an Up card, I've got my account and everything. I will probably move over everything once they can start offering like frequent flyers, because all of our business banking is. All of our personal business banking is with NAB, so they're not too bad at the moment because most things are free. Yeah. But I can see just the way that Ferrokia and Up do tech and product is amazing. I can see 2 years from now that they are going to be dominating the big four banks.
And the thing that I'm sort of excited about is that they announced their API in a recent email. They announced that they're working on an API, but brilliantly, they announced it in binary. So it actually, so when you read the monthly newsletter that they send out, you know, they were saying, you know, we've done this, we've done that, we've done the other. And then there was this block of numbers, zeros and ones, which of course I went to decode to work out what it was saying. And it was basically, we're working on an API. And if you're a developer, you know, keep watching out for that. And I'm there thinking,
that's so funny.
Cool would that be? How clever it is to announce it as, you know, as a block of binary, but also B, you know, how cool will it be to actually have an API into, you know, into what you're doing there? So that should be quite, you know, fun to play with.
Yeah, that is very good. I do like Dom, and I'm looking forward to having him back on. I think we're looking at getting him back on in June before we start doing in-person interviews, but it's a very exciting company, and make sure we'll link it in the show notes. But look, James, where can people find you on the interwebs?
So podnews.net is obviously where I do my podcasting newsletter. I am also at james.cridland.net, which is my more personal email, my more personal website and stuff like that. And I'm on Twitter if you fancy sometimes seeing me having an argument at James Cridland.
Awesome. James, thanks for coming on the show.
It's a great pleasure.
Thanks for listening in to this episode. If you like it, do leave us a written review on your podcast app
as it helps us continue going on a weekly basis, and we do love reading those reviews as well. If you want the show notes, you can find that below or with our previous guest at neural.com/podcast. That's neural.com/podcast. To watch the full video, search Uncommon Show on YouTube, and to keep up to date with behind the scenes and clips for the show, you can find us at Uncommon_show on Instagram. But until next time, guys, thank you so much for listening.